Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today is the Republican candidate for Secretary of State. Robert Sprague hopes to be the next person in charge of Ohio's elections. He'll share his thoughts on President Trump's speech last week, once again calling election integrity into question. Also this morning in our community and business spotlight, it's a big summer for milestone anniversaries. Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse locally is celebrating 100 years of brightening people's days. And we'll get an update on programs and activities at the Findlay Family YMCA. Stephanie Parsons will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. So this is big news as you are just waking up, kind of groggy, getting ready to start your day. It's the first thing that many of us reach for, that first morning cup of coffee, that wake-up juice. And the American Heart Association says that new research indicates consuming up to 5 cups of coffee a day is generally safe for most adults. This is big because this has been an area of some controversy for a number of years. How much coffee should we have? Should we have any coffee at all? And how much caffeine in that coffee, right? So according to a new scientific statement released yesterday, the American Heart Association said their research suggests that regularly consuming caffeinated coffee without added sugars, flavors, or cream was linked to a lower risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, stroke, heart failure, and some irregular heart rhythms. More good news. Now, researchers do caution that studying the effects of caffeine on the cardiovascular system is challenging because the benefits could be related to compounds in coffee other than the caffeine. But they went on to say that additional research is needed on coffee and other caffeine-containing products. But, at least according to the American Heart Association, go ahead, chug that morning coffee. 5 cups of coffee a day is just fine. So, all right, there you go. You need to wake up this morning. You have permission from the health experts. By the way, speaking of things we drink, this also kind of interesting. I saw this on the Newswire. A Texas microbrewery now has plans to sell a beer that is literally out of this world. Starbase Brewing, based in Austin, will be using yeast that was aboard the latest launch by SpaceX into outer space. The latest launch from the payload survived re-entry and was recovered off the coast of California. And so they are going to use this yeast that was on the payload to create this new beer. Now, this is the same brewery, you recall, that last year tested the fermentation process aboard the International Space Station. And this is important research because if we're going to go out and explore and even colonize other planets, we're going to want beer. We're going to want beer, so we should make sure that we can ferment yeast in outer space. So this is important research. But they tested this last year, but since the test last year was part of a NASA mission, it was only allowed to be for research. They were not able to sell any of the products generated or created out of that yeast that they used in the research. This, however, is a commercial space flight with SpaceX, so they're allowed to use it now, and they will be, I don't know what the beer will be called or when it will be available, but the company says they have plans to sell that beer from the outer space yeast. Okay. Let's see. A couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know this morning. Most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day from the health, in the health category. A new study from Cornell and Penn State, joint research. Cornell and Penn State is questioning one of America's most repeated weight loss strategies. you've ever tried to shed a few pounds, you've probably heard this advice to drink more water, that it suppresses your appetite, right? Makes you feel more full, and therefore, the theory goes that you will eat less. But analyzing nearly 200 lunches in a university lab, scientists found that those who drank more water during their meals actually ate more, not less. Every additional 100 grams of water people consumed, every additional 100 grams of water consumed corresponded to roughly 39 more grams of food and 49 extra calories. So 100 grams of water equals roughly 50 extra calories. This is completely turns this advice on its head. Researchers believe that the reason for this is that water may reset the palate, interrupting what they call sensory-specific satiation. It's early in the morning. Basically, this is the natural decline in the appeal of a food that helps end meals. Because after a while, the food just doesn't taste as good because you've had enough. And the water resets that palate. So instead, they say, drinking water before eating showed more promise for reducing intake. So instead of drinking more water during the meal, drink more before eating. The authors warn that their recommendations to drink water during meals to reduce food may actually backfire. So if you are trying to shed a few pounds and you've heard that advice, this is big news. And also I saw this again on the Health Wire this morning, and I thought this is important information to pass along because I never really thought about this, but it makes sense when you hear it. Physicians, specifically Dr. Purva Grover with the Cleveland Clinic, are advising riders of e-bikes to take extra safety precautions. There have been a lot of, e-bikes have become very, very popular. These electric powered bikes. They become very popular, and especially more children riding these. And there have been a lot of crashes that have led to serious injuries, especially, again, in younger riders. So Dr. Grover with the Cleveland Clinic warns that when you are riding an e-bike, you need to wear a helmet, which you would think goes without saying. But her point is that most people are wearing the wrong helmet. People are wearing just regular bicycle helmets. And e-bikes go faster. Therefore, the crashes may be more serious, and the regular bike helmets are not designed for the higher speeds of e-bikes. So it's the wrong helmet. If you're riding a regular bike helmet that you would wear with a typical pedal-powered bike, then you're not being protected. As it's still better than wearing nothing, but you're not being as protected as you should. Now, that doesn't mean you have to have a, you know, full head motorcycle helmet. You know what I mean? It's not a crash helmet. It's not they're not saying you need one like NASCAR drivers wear or something, you know, race car drivers wear. Nothing like that. But there are helmets specifically designed for e-bikes that provide more protection than typical bike helmets. So, an e-bike-specific helmet is needed because of the faster speed on these e-bikes. I have to say that I would have never thought about that. I don't have an e-bike. I don't have an electric bike. But if I did, I would have never thought about that. And obviously, you know, just wearing a helmet, because even though it is a quote-unquote bike, it is motorized, and it is even more important to wear a helmet. Also, of course, urges parents to talk to their kids about the rules of the road to lower the chances of a crash. So that's always a good idea. But make sure you're wearing the right helmet. That's good advice. Never really thought about this. And one other item here among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started. I don't know if you heard about this. The University of Michigan is going to have a new leader of its athletic department. The university announced yesterday that athletic director Ward Manuel will step down at the end of the calendar year. The school also released a summary of an independent investigation into the culture of the athletic department, which made several recommendations to improve accountability and transparency, but concluded that the issues were not widespread. AD Manuel led the athletic department for over a decade. It says here that included national championships in both football and men's basketball, but was also marked by high-profile scandals, including the Connor Stallions sign-stealing scandal and the mess involving now former football coach Sharon Moore. And, of course, last month, head basketball coach Dusty May also left Ann Arbor just after just two seasons as at the basketball program to become coach of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks. So there's been quite a bit of upheaval in the Michigan athletic department, and now the AD is going to step down. Interesting. Probably not a surprise for many fans of the Michigan Wolverines. But there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Another round of severe weather is on the way today, with areas east of I-71 expected to be hit the hardest. Severe thunderstorms, damaging winds, and flash flooding are likely, with the possibility of hail and potential tornadic activity. The warning area also includes southwest Ohio, which is still recovering from Friday's storms, and Mahoning County in northeast Ohio, which was declared a state of emergency by the governor last week. Cincinnati fire officials report that the Duck Creek floodgate in Oakley failed to close Friday, causing catastrophic flooding that left one person dead, three injured, and dozens of homes and businesses submerged. Because the area is a low risk for flooding, none of the affected areas were covered by flood insurance. Five people, including two sets of parents, are now confirmed dead after drowning in the Scioto River at the O'Shaughnessy Reservoir in Delaware County as they attempted to rescue a struggling swimmer. Several young children have been orphaned. In northeast Ohio, Medina is launching a professional sharpshooter program to help manage a deer problem in the county. In southeast Ohio, a former Scioto County commissioner has pleaded guilty to theft in office and participating in a kickback scheme. His wife was also charged with tampering with evidence. In northwest Ohio, a Hancock County program is offering clothing assistance to students ahead of the upcoming school year. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Get a recap of all the day's news from across the state.
Our Winnet affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
Haley Kirby reporting in downtown Toledo.
From the State House, Kevin Landers.
ONN Canton.
ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland explains.
In Marietta, Brett Wharf, ONN News.
Emma Henderson in Genoa.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Listen at onnradio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts from the Ohio News Network.
Our cover story this morning, as the Republican candidate for Secretary of State, Findlay native Robert Sprague, hopes to be the next person in charge of Ohio's elections. So we thought it would be appropriate to get his thoughts on President Trump's speech last week, which was focused largely on election integrity and once again calling the results of the 2020 election into question. And Mr. Sprague, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. So, appreciate you having me on.
So let me start with that that question. What was your reaction? I'm assuming that you watched the speech Thursday. What was your initial reaction?
Sure, I did. You know, and first of all, I just want to say that I appreciate elected leaders, particularly the president, being interested and concerned about election integrity. I don't think there's anything more important to our republic than you knowing that your vote matters and that it counts. And when I was listening to the president, what I heard him say is that our foreign adversaries, and we know who they are, it's North Korea, it's Russia, it's China, it's Iran, They will try to not just influence our elections, they'll try to control our elections and infiltrate the electorate. And they're trying to do that every day on social media. We all see it right before our eyes. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me one bit that they're trying to manipulate our elections. We won't let them do it in Ohio. And that's why election security is so important. So I thought the main message was that, you know, we've got to be careful. We have to be vigilant.
I was reading some of the analysis in the speech, and probably the best, most balanced postmortem on what the president said last week was that, yes, it is certainly right to call attention to the vulnerabilities that exist within the system. And that is a level of concern. We should be addressing those to the extent that we can. But to equate that to meddling and interference and issues that just because vulnerabilities exist doesn't mean that they have necessarily been exploited. And the president still seems focused on an election that happened 6 years ago and the outcome of that election, which actually doesn't that harm the president's case more than help it, because it seems like he's just airing grievances that there's no evidence that's been proven that there was any exploitation of those vulnerabilities.
Well, I'm not focused on the elections from 6 years ago. I could tell you, as an elected official running for the Secretary of State's office, I'm focused on what we do next. And well, to your point, like, let's focus on how we get rid of these vulnerabilities. And I think one of the key aspects of that is photo ID. You know, you can't have a secure election if you don't have photo ID. And that's a huge part of the Save America Act. That's why he wants to get that passed at the federal level. But I'll tell you, I like the fact that we're, I mean, as a state, we're supposed to be running the elections. Now, Congress can pass laws at the federal level to tell, you know, regulations for the elections. But as a state, we have the power to run our elections. And I want to do a great job with that. That's what I want to do as your next Secretary of State. I want to run the most secure elections in the history of the state of Ohio. And, you know, a lot of those vulnerabilities that he talked about in the speech come back to photo ID, number one. You have to have photo ID, not just for the in-person ballots, but you also have to have photo ID for the mail-in ballots. And then the second piece is making sure that people are American citizens when they register to vote. That was a huge piece of what he talked about. A quarter of a million illegal immigrants registered to vote, largely in just four states that they talked about, that he talked about during that speech. And, you know, we do a good job here in the state of Ohio, but we do need to move to an upfront citizenship check so that only American citizens can get registered to vote here in our state.
A couple of points on that. The idea of photo ID to vote, that's extremely popular with the electorate on both sides of the aisle, seem to support that very strongly. Proof of citizenship to register is widely supported, but there are some concerns about those who may have challenges in order to get their hands on the documentation to do that. I think you would agree that we don't want to disenfranchise legal voters and discourage them from making their voice heard. How do we make that easier for particularly, I think the prime example that keeps coming up is women who get married and change their name have to jump through extra hoops in order to prove their citizenship. It seems as though there should be an easier way than having to track down all of these documents that are not easily available for those that don't already have them.
Absolutely. I think there is an easier way, and it's using some of the federal databases. You know, right now we get your birthday, we get the last four of your social security number, or your driver's license. And we can check that against DMV records. We can check that against Social Security records. We can check that against systematic alien verification for entitlements records for naturalized citizens, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, the federal government has that information. We don't have all that information necessarily as a state. We have some of it if you put it into the DMV records. So, there are ways to do upfront citizenship checks that do not involve people hauling documents over to the Board of Elections. But if all those other things fail, then people are going to have to produce documentation. And I absolutely believe that we will not disenfranchise a single American citizen. And we are going to actually create a new post within the Secretary of State's office to address exactly this. And it's going to be called the Director of Voter Advocacy. And we will sit there and hold people's hand. And we, if you're an American citizen, we will help you find the documentation that you need to vote.
The second question that has come up with respect to the SAVE Act at the federal level, and you were touching on this just a moment ago, that concerns a number of people is the constitutional question. Constitution clearly says that states are responsible for the time, manner, and date of elections. I would imagine that if it were a Democrat in the White House, if it were a Congress controlled by Democrats, that you would be the first to push back on their trying to dictate to the states what requirements there should be in elections and how elections should be run at the states. The Constitution clearly says that's the purview of the states, not the federal government. How do you square that?
Well, no, the Constitution says that Congress shall have the power to regulate the elections of the United States of America for national congressmen and senators. So that's what the Constitution says, but it says that states may choose the time, manner, and place of the elections. But to your point, and I agree with this, that I would rather have the states be in charge of putting these security features and these regulations in place to make our elections secure. That's our responsibility as a state. And it's much better at a state level because, listen, I don't want to be under the same rules necessarily that California has, if I'm being honest. I don't want to have our elections look like California's. We're different than California or Minnesota or New York. We're common sense Midwesterners, and I think that our elections should reflect that. And we do a good job with elections here in the state of Ohio. And our boards of elections do a wonderful job. They're very knowledgeable. They are super conscientious. They're bipartisan. And I'm not running to tear them down. I'm running to build them up. And so I think that it is good and appropriate for us at a state level to pass these regulations to make our elections secure. And I think the final piece of that, if you want to make our elections secure, is to finally eliminate these ballot harvesting drop boxes in our state. There's no need to have ballot drop boxes in the state of Ohio when we have 30 days of early voting. You can go in and drop your ballot off anytime to the Board of Election from 8 to 5, 30 days before the election, including the weekend hours that they have. Those ballot drop boxes make it impossible for us to enforce the ballot harvesting laws to prevent ballot harvesting. And we've all seen those videos of people taking a bunch of ballots and stuffing them into the drop boxes. So, I mean, if you want to make our election secure, it's a three-part formula. You got to move to an upfront citizenship check. You got to make sure that you have photo ID, not just for in-person, but also mail-in ballots. And you have to eliminate these ballot harvesting drop boxes.
The president has part of his what he would like to see, and he said this a number of times, is to eliminate mail-in voting entirely, except for some extreme cases, military, serious illness, that kind of thing. He has said time and time again that he wants to eliminate mail-in balloting. Would you go that far?
I think a better approach is to secure the mail-in voting. You know, I remember in the Department of Taxation, we had people overseas that were filing for Ohioans' income tax refunds. And as soon as we required people to mail in a copy of their driver's license to get that refund, the fraud went to zero. And so this is a proven method of making sure that we have, that you can validate the person on the other end of that piece of paper, is to have them show a copy of their photo ID. I'll tell you, I like the in-person voting. That's the most secure way to vote. And the absentee ballots really originated during the Civil War with the Union soldiers. That was the first time we ever had absentee ballots in our country. And, we want people who are over the age of 65, we want people who are first responders who have to work on election day or during the month of elections. Mm-hmm. We want everyone, who is convalescing in a nursing home, obviously, or people that are traveling. We want every American citizen to be able to cast that ballot. So there will always be exceptions for those citizens.
We will leave it there for now. I'm sure we will speak again as the campaign continues. Again, Secretary of State candidate Robert Sprague with us this morning, sharing reaction from the president's speech last week on election integrity. And Mr. Sprague, thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Putting Sinks Flowers in the spotlight this morning because they have a big anniversary coming up. Tammy Jordan is current owner of Sinks Flowers. She purchased it from Chuck when he retired just a couple of years ago. And thank you both for taking the time. This is a big anniversary because I don't know how many businesses that we can say have lasted for 100 years. Pretty doggone impressive.
Pretty rare, I think, especially here Hancock County, Findlay. I don't think there's very many.
It just doesn't happen all the time. And talk a little bit about that history.
Well, it started with my great aunt and uncle, Lois and Francis Sink. They were brother and sister. Started growing flowers out on 2nd Street in the field in Selma. That was in 1926. 1929, they moved a greenhouse there, and then later they moved a second one there. After World War II, my uncles bought it from them, and when I got home from Vietnam in 1970, I started to work for them in 71, and I ended up buying it from my uncles.
And then when you decided, Chuck, that you were ready to retire, talk about the decision to hand over the reins to Tammy. What made her the right person to come in and carry that legacy forward?
Well, she'd been working for Sinks for, 30 years?
33 years. Yeah, I hired in as holiday help, and I just never left.
She was the perfect person for the job. She was artistic, and she understood the business, and I didn't have any qualms at all about moving on.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked by Chuck for literally, beside him for 33 years, so I mean, I'm not family, but I feel like Chuck is kind of family, Chuck and Paula both.
So handing over the reins to Tammy, you knew that the business and the family legacy was going to be in good hands.
Absolutely.
And Tammy, when you started 30 plus years ago, and I know you worked in floral design even before that, did you have it on your radar that you wanted to have your own shop? I mean, could you have envisioned yourself in this role that you have now?
Actually, I mean, when I started in the business, 38 years ago, I wanted to be an art teacher. I wanted to do something with art. I decided to take a year off from college, and I started in the floral industry in Toledo, and then I moved to California, worked in a couple shops. And when I came back, I hired in as holiday help from Chuck. I think I am an art teacher, but with just a different medium. I'm very happy. I know this is where I was meant to be, and I love what I do.
So here we are, 100 years in. You have a big celebration coming up later this month.
Well, it's hard to believe that we're going to be 100. We're going to have our celebration Thursday, July 30th, and Friday the 31st. From 8 a.m. to 5:30. We'd love for people to stop by and see us, kind of like take part in the nostalgia that we, we have photos of kind of like from, the 20s, the 30s on. We want to thank Finley. We're going to have some raffles. We're going to
give away roses.
Yeah, we're going to give away a rose to our customers.
Very nice.
We want to thank everyone.
And you also have some terrific discounts.
Right. We're offering 26% off of our silks, planners, hard goods. We just thought it would be something kind of neat.
So that is coming up on Thursday and Friday, the 30th and the 31st. Interesting, you were talking about looking back through all of those photos and all of those memories through the years. How different is just the business in general than what it was back then? I mean, flowers are still flowers, but the industry itself has to be so incredibly different.
Well, back then, the main part of the business was the funeral business. Mm-hmm. Potted plants and things that we grew in the greenhouse. But as time went on, funerals became less and less, and so we morphed into birthdays, anniversaries, celebrations. Also, the type of flowers we dealt with. You know, many years ago, everything was gladiolas and mums. Now it's garden flowers and other kind of exotics.
Yes.
Yeah, the trends in flowers have changed greatly.
Tammy and Chuck with us from Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse. 100th birthday celebration coming up the end of this month. Something to check out. If folks want to drop by, what are the hours there at Sink's, by the way?
So we are open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5:30. And on Saturdays, we are open from 8 to 2.
And you are also online?
Sinksflowers.com. And you can follow us on Facebook. We're doing kind of like some nostalgic pictures, some trivia from the past, showing a lot of the memories from over the years.
And here's to the next 100 years. Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse in the spotlight with us this morning. Tammy, Chuck, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
And thank you.
Thank you.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
A Mississippi woman was arrested recently after a traffic stop revealed that she was driving naked with multiple firearms and drugs in her vehicle. It's like she woke up one morning and said, "How much trouble can I get into today?" Driving naked with multiple firearms and drugs in her vehicle. Officers pulled over 22-year-old Caitlin Maxwell in a 2017 Dodge Challenger that, when they approached the vehicle, smelled strongly of marijuana. A vehicle search uncovered 3 Glock handguns and 2 AR-15 rifles, one modified with a switch to fire automatically. Ms. Maxwell told investigators her boyfriend used a 3D printer to manufacture the conversion devices. So this just gets better and better and better. Ms. Maxwell eventually was booked into the Jones County Jail on multiple felony and misdemeanor charges. And to think, this is the crazy part of this story, and to think it all could have been avoided if she had just gotten dressed first. I mean, the fact that she was naked was what initially attracted the attention of the arresting officers. Had she gotten dressed, she might have avoided the whole mess. Moral of the story, get dressed before you head out the door in the morning. Speaking of the adventures of naked people, an Arizona man is facing multiple charges after allegedly stripping down and riding on top of a moving train in northeastern Colorado. Wow. The Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office identified the suspect as Daniel Ray Balance of Quartzsite, Arizona. Authorities say he broke a window to board a Union Pacific locomotive before climbing onto the roof while the train was moving. Witnesses reported seeing Mr. Balance riding naked atop the train before deputies took him into custody this past Thursday. Arresting officers noted that Mr. Balance expressed his love of vodka, beer, and playing the banjo. Which is interesting, but still doesn't entirely explain what he was doing on top of the train without any clothes on. Maybe you should have just stuck to the banjo. It would have been less of an issue. By the way, This was a Union Pacific train, but it was not part of the big boy tour. This is not the big boy that we were talking about. No, 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 no. Totally different thing. And finally, in the broken news this morning, firefighters in Kansas City had to respond to an unusual rescue after a man climbed inside of a portable restroom toilet at a World Cup watch party and then couldn't get out. Not just that he went into the Port-a-John, he went into the holding tank of the Port-a-John and then couldn't get out. A driver for Patriot Portable Restrooms discovered the man when he was collecting the units after the watch party was over. So he missed the entire game because he was stuck in the Port-a-John. And apparently didn't want to come out after the man refused to exit. A passing motorcycle officer was flagged down. When the door was open, no one was visible until a head emerged from the tank. Firefighters had to cut open the unit to free the man, who was then hosed down by crews. The man said he climbed in to retrieve a Mountain Dew bottle that he dropped in the night before. You know what? Next time, just let the Mountain Dew go. Just let it go, man. It ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. I have a feeling he had been enjoying something a little bit stronger than Mountain Dew, though, if you know what I mean. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN needs your help to stuff the bus with school supplies for needy students in our area. Go to WFIN.com for donation information. Bring your donation to the Yellow School Bus at the Tiffin Avenue McDonald's in Findlay, Thursday and Friday, July 23rd and 24th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. School supply registration forms are required and can be accessed at cchsupport.org. Stuff the Bus brought to you by McDonald's, Flag City Auto Wash, Tidy Rides, Family Resource Center, and 1330 WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So with the World Cup taking place primarily in the U.S. This summer, there's been a lot of talk about soccer's place in the American sports hierarchy. Well, American football remains our nation's top sport by a wide margin. That is not a surprise. Everybody knows that. But this is kind of interesting. In a new survey of 1,100 U.S. adults, researchers asked participants to choose between five major sports in head-to-head matchups. And football topped every pairing. 65% preferred football over basketball. 69% preferred football over baseball. 71% prefer football over soccer. 76% prefer football over hockey. But then some of the other matchups were kind of interesting. Basketball narrowly edged baseball overall, 52 versus 48%, while soccer beat hockey, 54 to 46%, which I thought was kind of interesting. And the performances varied according to demographic group. African Americans heavily favored basketball over everything else, even football, as it turns out. Hispanic Americans lean towards soccer, which, again, is not a big surprise. White Americans showed the strongest affinity for baseball. So, again, none of those are necessarily surprising. I did find it interesting that age played a role. Older adults favor baseball more so. Younger adults prefer soccer. So that's kind of the breakdown by age. But overall, at the end of the day, according to this survey, 57% of Americans report being at least somewhat interested in sports. Any sport, just sports in general. 57% of Americans. And so I'm thinking, you know, 57% represents what? A little over 200 million Americans. And with that large number of people being sports fans, I gotta think that's a big enough tent that we should have room for just about every sport, right? Time to get an update on what's happening at the Findlay Family YMCA. And Stephanie Parsons with us this morning. You've got a couple of big events for youth coming up. Tell us, first of all, got the triathlon. We were talking about the triathlon, I think, last month with Jerry. Give us all of the details on this.
Yeah, so our youth triathlon, this would be our third year. We did take a year off last year, and we're back at it. It will be held at our Riverside Park Saturday, the 25th at 8 a.m. is the start, and it's just for youth. If you've never been, just to be a bystander, it is absolutely impressive to watch these kids run and bike and swim and just so much fun.
And how many, I don't mean to put you on the spot if you don't have a number, I apologize for this. Do you have any idea how many kids are signed up for this this year?
As of now, we're up to about over 30 kids.
Wow.
So we're still accepting if you would like to have be a part of it.
Okay.
You don't have to have a lot of training, just so if parents are like, well, gosh, it's this weekend and my kids... You don't need a lot of training. It's just a fun way to get your kids involved in the triathlon
and get them moving and, you know,
yes,
get them outdoors and active. And this weekend, weather should cooperate. It looks in the extended forecast, nothing like today. So that's good as far as that goes.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah. So that is happening. And when give us the details on this. This is on Saturday, you said. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. It's on Saturday, this Saturday, and the start time's at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So we do ask that everyone arrives about a half hour, 45 minutes prior to get the bikes all set up and get your t-shirts, and the kids will get a little goodie package. And I said, it's just impressive to watch.
And then you also have an event indoors at the Y coming up here real soon.
Yeah, so this was something that Quinn, our youth director here at the Findlay YMCA, with the 250 America turning 250, we wanted kids to take advantage of celebrating it. And so we're just asking kiddos to come in and try to get 250 baskets made in the month of July. And we have a running total at the front desk, and it's fun to watch kids come in and look at their buddies and say, oh, they're beating me. I'm going to step up today. So,
so the 200, the basketball challenge going on, that's throughout the month of July. So still a little bit of time to get those totals up there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess we should mention, because we mentioned, you know, the weather this morning being when we have these kind of days, and we've, you know, had a few of these, whether it's the heat or whether it's the, you know, the rain or what have you. I mean, still lots of things to do indoors at the Y. Here's another great example of why it's great to be a member.
100%. So we have two facilities, one membership. So that means when you purchase a membership, you get access to our downtown and East Branch. And I always like to remind people, we have 5 indoor tennis courts along with pickleball courts with that membership. So this is a good day to come inside, try out pickleball, even get the tennis racket out, get your buddies come in. You can come in as a non-member 3 times per year.
Okay.
And then we just ask that you become a member at that point. So any members can bring a guest too for free. So any members out there that want to bring somebody today, come on in.
Absolutely. And as we've always mentioned, you become a member anytime. We think about this at the beginning of the year, you know, when there's New Year's resolutions and all of that. And obviously, you know, right at the first of the year makes for a logical point to join for the year. But you can do that anytime. I mean, you can sign up anytime.
Anytime. And like I said, we have so many amenities. We have two indoor swimming pools. We have 2 great wellness centers. Lots of individuals like to use the East Branch for our free weight machines. but are downtown, you know, lots of kiddos come here to hang out and play basketball with their buddies in racquetball courts too.
And while we're on the subject of programming, there are always classes and all kinds of programmings for all ages at the Y, and there are actually too many to go into details on all of them, but all of that information is on the website as well.
That's correct. So we're wrapping up our camps right now, our summer camps, which my kids have always been a part of camp, and they have so many great stories of our outdoor traditional camp. But we also have our camp that takes part at the ELC, the brand new ELC, which if you want your kids to be a little bit more indoors, I would say choose that option.
Yeah.
So, you're right, Chris.
And speaking of the ELC, we're talking about back to school because we got our Stuff the Bus campaign here this weekend, and we're starting to shift into that mode. I know it doesn't seem like we should be talking back to school already, but with that, you are looking to hire staff for the Early Learning Center as we come up on the fall as well.
Yeah, so we are accepting applications as we speak for any kind of teachers or experience as assistant teachers. Also, I want to let any parents that need any kind of childcare, we do have open spots. They're getting very few. So if you're looking for maybe before and after school for transportation or anything, we have spots. So just reach out to us. But more importantly, we need the teachers to, our capacity at the ELC is about 283. And when we built it, we were around 215. And we're actually very pleased to say we're almost at capacity when fall comes with all the students coming back.
And obviously that is predicated on having the right number of staff because you can only have so many kids per staff member and all of that. So obviously if you don't have the staff, not going to be able to have the kids. So this is very important. If someone is interested in learning more about those positions, how do they do that?
Just give Eric Swanson a call. He's our HR director. Also, I just want to mention, this place is absolutely beautiful to work for. We have lots of benefits. You get a free membership. Your kiddos get a free membership. We have retirement. I can't say enough about our retirement fund. And we also do for full-time, we have insurance for our full-time staff.
And so, obviously, you're working in a state-of-the-art facility because we bragged about that, the brand new ELC. And as just to mention, go back on what you were mentioning, there are a few openings. What's the process if I want to get more information about getting my kid in?
If you would like to get your child in, once again, reach out to Heather Moore.
Okay.
She's our director at the ELC. And you can find all that information on our website, or you can just call the ELC. As of now, we're putting people, I don't like to say our wait list, but it is a wait list until school starts. Because there are parents that just need it for school. So you'll just have to call and get your kids' names on that list.
All right. Very good. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about everything going on at the Findlay Family YMCA. And once again, Stephanie Parsons with us this morning with the latest update. Thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about every day on the program at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Plus, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. And we thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, the more cryptocurrency becomes mainstream, the easier it is for scam artists to use it as a tool. And they are doing just that. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.